Simon and Rusty here with the Bounce Back Ability Podcast, the podcast that explores how to deal with obstacles, setbacks, and challenges.
Hope you enjoy the pod.
Looking forward to it. Listen on. Hi, welcome to the podcast. Rusty, who have we got coming on today?
Rich Bryan. Thought I'd just bring in one of my mates just to make it easy for us, really.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, yeah, no, I'm excited to meet him, though. He's got a cool job.
Yeah, so, and maybe you should tell him a few times in the podcast that he's got a cool job as well, just to reaffirm that for him, because his job often sounds quite stressful to me. It's fairly responsive. He's currently RPA and helping support rugby players, both male and female, across the country, and with all the kind of trials and tribulations and things that go on as a professional sportsman. Historically, so I played with him a very long time ago in the 90s at Bath. He was training to be a solicitor then and subsequently did a bit of work in the world of lawyers and that type of stuff. So I'm really interested as well in, like, his experiences of rugby. I think he did two or three ACLs. I can never remember. He was a good player. He's a great leader. And so we'll have had times it gets a bit like me where you're playing or you're not playing. So, yeah, I'm just really curious. And I actually, funnily enough, probably haven't unpacked that much of this stuff with him. So this is a great excuse for me to do that.
Well, good. I could be a gooseberry and hang out with you guys. I'm quite excited to do it. Let's get him on.
This is your captain speaking. Welcome aboard BA Flight 582 from Bristol to Alicante. Simon, have you got your headphones on?
I have got my headphones on. I'm quite disappointed you two don't, but, you know, I'm doing what I'm told because I'm a good person. And we know the microphones are an issue for me, so this is my security blanket. I can hear what the listeners can hear, and yeah, it's working nicely.
Brilliant, and that happy. Was probably our quickest start ever. We only had one SIM card issue. The microphones were working.
Yeah,
well, probably 3 minutes max to get us going.
Yeah, and even something as clever as this that is basically foolproof. I bought some new kit, and the SIM card just didn't work. So there we are. But I'm going to go back to Luke's podcast and be all mindful and chilled.
Yeah, and we're not calling it mindful, but that's cool. In the room today, Rich Bryan. How you doing, mate? You all right?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, sir. How many press-ups have you done today?
I've done no press-ups today.
Simon, Ross, how many press-ups have you done?
I've done 10 press-ups today.
Have you done 10?
I've done 10, yeah. Wednesday is weights and press-ups day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Done 120.
I don't know. I think Rusty wants a badge. What do you reckon, Rich?
Let's create one.
Let's make a badge for Rusty for his
presence. Anyway, well, welcome everyone. Rich Bryan, great friend, brilliant rugby player. if I had his mindset, I'd have been a brilliant rugby player as well. If he'd had my skill set, he'd have been even better. We appreciate you coming on the pod. Obviously, actually, really interested to talk about, I guess, the bounce back ability required probably as a professional sportsman and some of the implications of that. And then also, obviously, now you are the main man at the RPA. Now Damien's finally gone on a full holiday. Why are you shaking
I'm
your head
not
at me?
The main man at the
is Christian the main man?
Christian is our general secretary, elected general secretary.
I'm so do you want to, because I don't actually know, do you want to give us a bit of background on what you're currently doing and what that
yeah,
involves?
Yeah, sure. I'm the player welfare director of the Rugby Players Association, which is the player representative body for professional and elite players, I should say, in England, men and women.
Brilliant job.
So I've been doing that role for 10 years. It is unbelievably broad, incredibly broad. No 2 days tend to be alike. And so I'm involved in helping players from a legal point of view, representation, might be helping players from a player welfare point of view, obviously, so that might be looking after player interests and protecting players and supporting players and all kinds of manner of different areas. That might be brain health is obviously a massive area for the sport at the moment. But I also help overseeing we have a player development program, which is called the Gainline program. So we have members of our team out working in Premiership clubs with the Red Roses, women's team, really supporting players in their lives as professional sportsmen and women.
So bounce back ability has got to be something you think about quite a bit then?
Yeah, because it's something actually I might always recognise it as such, but I guess it's something we're dealing with either in ourselves, our team, or within the individuals and teams we are supporting and helping. on a daily basis. So we have approximately just over 600 current playing members at the moment, and a cohort of retired players as well. So
yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So you said no typical day is the same. So as a challenge, then, what's typical day look like?
Typical day. That's a very good one, actually. I currently work from home, for example, but I might be involved in club visits. It might be, for example, at the moment, what are we working on at the moment? There's the professional game partnership, for example.
Yeah.
So we're heavily involved in that in the future of English professional men's rugby. And it's ensuring that players play a part in that, are represented in part of that. So that might be involved in negotiations, discussions around that. It might be helping players because they've got an issue. It might be a contractual issue. It might be an issue with their agent and some advice around that. It could be supporting the team in other ways. We run a confidential counselling service, so it might be helping to signpost players towards that. It's really varied.
So that sounds really important, and something totally aware of myself, but then I'm not a professional rugby player, so I wouldn't be necessarily, but it's good.
No, I mean, who knows with all the weight training you're doing, Simon, that your best days may be ahead of you.
I have no goal for my weight training, Rusty. I just lift some weights.
Nice. I was thinking about, so how would you introduce yourself? So I guess one of the things I often think about with the bounce back ability is like identity. So we both used to be rugby players, yes, together.
Yes.
And we probably thought of ourselves as rugby players, although definitely probably thought I was like head of parties as well. And then, but also like you were a trained lawyer. Yes. You're a husband, you're a father. Like, I'm just curious, like, what's got you to this point? And then I'm just interested because obviously you work with lots of players who are rugby players, and that might be like the primary source of their identity. I'm just curious.
Yeah. I how long have we been friends, do you reckon?
Well, what do you mean by friends?
Well, competitors to start with.
Competitors is interesting. Yeah. Sorry, I just spoke to a player the other day, he's a pro player, who was at Bath, and he was best friends with another player throughout his whole life. And then he said we had a moment of clarity where we were sat in a coffee shop, and I just turned to him and went, has rugby made us enemies? Like, how have the coaches made us compete against each other so much that we now do not see each other as friends? And he said we had about half a day just chatting about that.
Well, the reason why I ask the question is I don't think we've probably never had this conversation, or perhaps we have, around identity.
Feeling like a gooseberry here, but go on. This is going to be exciting.
Yeah, so we would have first met in, I'm going to say...
Poon on Ars.
No, it wasn't Poon on Ars. That's actually where I met my wife, but that's a different story. 97, I think. 97. You were just out of university. I was probably a bit in awe of you because you were like super confident.
You were in awe of Rusty.
Oh, yeah. No. This is in the era where no one wore boots other than black boots. He wore white boots.
Did he? Were you a white boot wearer? I didn't know that.
Me and Steph Jones, shout out to Steph Jones, I think probably started rocking them in about 1994. Oh. So that was ahead of the game.
So that was the introduction. I was like, and he was a really confident individual, ridiculously fit, didn't seem to work particularly hard to get that fitness, which is always really, really annoying. But as he said, as he alluded to earlier, he once said not that long ago, if I'd had your kind of work rate and you'd had my skills, we would have played for England. And it's the best backhanded compliment I think I've ever had. I like to think I had some skills. So that was when we met. And identity wise, it's really interesting because I, for a lot of the time when I was a professional rugby player for 11 years, I kind of balked against this identity of solely being seen as a rugby player. But at university, that's what I was known as. I was known as Rich Rugby Player. My wife's friends knew me as the rugby player. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. And as soon as I balked against that because, I was trained to become a lawyer at the same time, all those kind of things. And I thought, there's more strings to my bow than this. But when I then retired and actually became a trainee solicitor, I kind of craved that identity. It's because that just disappeared. And I felt, that was a point of difference. And now I'm in an office, actually just around the corner from where we're sat now. I just felt that real sort of identity. I was almost craving for that rugby player kind of identity, which had gone. And I felt that I became a bit boring after that because it's difficult.
You know, boring lawyer.
Everyone likes to. Well, not everyone, but people like to talk to you as a rugby player. Okay, what do you do for a living? I'm a rugby player. Wow. What do you do as a living? I'm a solicitor. Yeah. Oh. That was a genuine reaction I got on a training centre.
Solicitor is very close to accountant.
There are definitely interesting solicitors.
So when I say I'm a play welfare director, I just tend to at least go, oh, what's that all about? So that loss of identity. And I remember the day I retired, or officially retired, and I was at the training ground and I finished my career play up in Leeds. And I just really vividly being at the training ground, pre-season training was underway, and I was a bit strange, I quite like pre-season training, and the lads were going out on the pitch and I was walking out the gate, and it was very vivid, this kind of idea of, you know, your usefulness is kind of done.
Can you still remember that image? Yeah.
And I remember it felt like the bus.
That's cool.
It felt like the bus is kind of leaving and you're not on it. And whilst you're on that bus, you were really important to that bus being, and it kind of chucked you off the back. That was no one's fault, by the way. I was injured and my knees let me down for one final time. And the club at Leeds tried really hard to kind of soften that as best they could. Like Stuart Lancaster was coach at the moment, at the time. And I remember he invited me out I was going to have to retire, and the preseason just started, and he invited me out for a pre-season meal with all the lads. And in his words always stuck with me and go, yeah, it'll be a bit of closure for you. And that burnt with me for so long. Again, he was trying to be kind, but I kind of balked against that and really sort of fought against that and was quite bitter about that for a long time. Before the pod started, we talked about running and things like that, and I've been fortunate, and even despite my knees, I've been able to run for 17 years. There's a particularly hard hill called Nightingale Valley in Bristol, and it's the hardest hill to run up in Bristol. And for years, for years, if I was struggling up that hill, you've got to conjure kind of a motivating factor to get you up that hill. And it'd be Stuart Lancaster telling me, it's closure. I've never spoken to him at all about that, but it was just kind of, that was what get, or be other things that you draw upon that you were kind of resentful about, when you're just to get you to the top of that hill, to motivate you. That was one of those things. And it just stuck with me for a good few years after I'd finished playing.
So that sounds like
not 17 years after. But
you're over it now. Okay. That's obviously really stuck with that sort of burn into your mind. And you know, like you say, Stuart, trying to be kind. Do you think that was good or bad then? Do you think it motivated you to do things, or do you think it actually held you back? Or
it's strange, because at the same time I had in my mind that I didn't want to overstay my welcome as a rugby player, because you'd sometimes you see players sort of play, and I always remember someone who was actually a solicitor said to me, and he was a rugby fan, he said, just play rugby for as long as you can. You're a long time retired. But I had in my mind there was a set period, but I wanted to retire at 32. That was in my mind. I wanted to retire at 32 and then get on with the rest of my life, and I think that's a decent innings. I had to retire at 30. It was no one's fault. It was just injury, and that's what happened. You've got to cope with it and deal with it. But it stuck around for quite a while. But then you've got new challenges, and our challenges at the time were, I got to move down from Leeds. My wife is heavily pregnant with my first child. I've got to change city, start a new career, and all at the same time. So I didn't really have time at that instant to process it. It was only later, when you had that time to sort of process what you've been through, because it was right, injured, retirement, right, clarify what your job is, yes, what's your career going to be, move city, have a child, all in the space of a few months. It was a bit bonkers at the time.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot to deal with in a few months.
And I guess this is what you're helping players with. I was just starting to write down there, like your relationship with the coach, whether you're selected, injury, like there's just stuff all the time as a player where you're getting like punched in the face a little bit. You've trained all pre-season, you get injured, You've played one game, you've played badly, you've been dropped. The coach doesn't speak to you for a very long period of time. Those are, you know, you have conversations that, like, where you just think there's a huge gap between what you think and what they think. Like, I just, before we, like, delve into, like, I mean, your role now, like, what are your experiences of that as a player, and how did you deal with those things where you needed to bounce back?
It was, it's really, because you've got all those different points. You say being selected, being dropped, being injured. ACL injuries take a long time to recover from. And 9 months out, and then try and get back to fitness, try and get back in the team. The thing is, looking back, is that the highs of your rugby career kind of stay with you longer than the lows. But there are those lows. There are those points. How did I used to get? I used to work hard. Yeah, you get to. I was really determined to try and get back to fitness, get back in the team. But I do remember there's a period at Bath, coming towards the end of my time at Bath. I've been there about 4 years, I think, and making the decision that I'm not getting enough of a crack of playing first team rugby. That's what I'm going to do. So I'm either going to, I've got to move. As great as to be part of Bath, I've got to move, and that's going to be kill or cure, because either I start to play more, or I'm going to go and do my next whatever it is I need to do in life. So I moved to Wales to try and get that, you know, that first team action on that, and it was great. It worked out well for me, but it could have gone the other way. And
till the club went bankrupt.
Well, that's a different story. That's a different club as well. But yeah, and that has actually had a really relevant. Extreme relevance for me recently in my job, but how did I deal with them? I probably, like everyone, like every rugby player, if you get dropped, you probably get a bit angry, and then you double your efforts. You get injured, you work really hard. I remember when I did my ACL for the first time, I was like, right, I'm just going to use this period as positively as I can. I'm going to go hit the gym hard, and I'm going to come out a different player. I did come out a different player. I was massive, and instead of actually probably doing my rehab as well as I might have done, I was probably spending too much time doing other things in the gym, and I'm not saying it affected, in fact my knee went again, but you kind of look back now years after and you think, God, I could have done that so differently. But that's what I was curious about,
like, who was helping us? Like, the other thing I was thinking about, did you see other people struggling?
Because
I actually had a really good good conversation with John Slighton a couple of years ago, where, because I really vividly remember Slighton at that time had played for England, remember scoring a hat-trick away in Ireland, and I remember looking at him thinking, this guy's struggling, but I didn't know what to do or how to help. And I guess that's where RPA and other things now fit in. But I don't know. Like, I don't think anyone was helping us. Now, I have had some reflections, and I was definitely having a good time in Pinot Noirs and the Assembly, where I met my wife. So that, it worked out well. But I do wonder if we were, like, medicating around some of the stresses and that, just because I just found it, like, it was tough.
It was. People were trying to help, actually. And again, it's with hindsight, you kind of. I'd had no problems with knee injuries, anything like that, and I had my first, so I went to Bridgend, played club rugby, then went to regional rugby, where I played for the Celtic Warriors. That lasted a year, and I'll delve into that in a moment. I went to the Dragons, and I had never had any knee problems, and then I did my rupture in my ACL for the first time, and worked really hard, as I said, to try and come back from that, and come back, play a few months, and then did it again, and it was devastating. Really, really devastating. And my dad was in hospital at the time, I remember that, and my dad was my biggest supporter, and he was in hospital with heart problems at the time, and I had to tell him that I've done my knee again. God, it's brutal. And we had a bit of a support group, because there were other players. I remember Kevin Morgan was going through a similar injury at the same time, and trying to support each other through rehab and whatever. But you're away, you're not part of that bus that's kind of, like I talked about earlier, that's got, you're kind of not really part of that bus again. You're in the gym on your own on, like, cold January, February mornings, working to a goal which seems miles away. And the club, there were people, there was one of the coaches tried to help me from a psychological point of view. And eventually they decided my contract wasn't going to be renewed, but the club tried to help me out, and they actually offered me a job, or said, well, we'll take a job at the club if you're thinking of use your legal background and what have you. And I was almost offended. I remember being and actually they could have cut my contract as well, and they didn't. They saw it through to the end. And it's only at the time you're like, what do you mean you can offer me a job? No, I'm a rugby player. I'm 29 years old. I'm not finished. You know, but they were just genuinely. I do think there are people out there who are trying to help, but perhaps it wasn't as formalised as the pathways to help weren't as obvious to the people back then. We're talking 20 years ago. So but people were really quite kind and generous. Just at the time, you don't necessarily see it because you're just so in that one track mind of I'm a professional rugby player. That's what I do. My identity.
That does speak to a sort of general principle around helping people, especially when with mental health things. I don't know what you guys think of this, but I've certainly learned that you don't give people things to do. You don't say, do you want a job? You really need to signpost them to people that can help them if they're struggling, don't you? You've got to listen, be kind, but fundamentally don't try and solve the problem for them.
Yeah.
Because you can't. You don't really know what's going on, and that's really the job of somebody who's a professional to deal with.
Exactly.
Is that something you come across now with your role in the RPA?
Yeah, because so we have pathways of support, a confidential counsellor. So our team, we have a team, very, very lucky to have the team we have of player development managers who are working with the players in the clubs on a daily basis and build those relationships to get to know the players, and a real safety net. Independent, because some players will go to a club doctor or a physio, but some won't want to go to their club doctor or physio with issues. So having that independent support there, and we're blessed in having the team we have who are so dedicated to supporting those individuals and can then signpost to help, whether it's mental well-being, treatment, support, whatever it is. Just having that pathway, that safety net, is really important, and 20 years ago we didn't have that, but I think that's something now with the at the time it was professional rugby, but not professional rugby as you don't necessarily recognise it now. It was increasingly
I think our physio Bath had an ultrasound machine, didn't he, and that was all he had. He hadn't, and so any injury, broken bone, needs the ultrasound machine.
As my wife's a physio, I'm not going to comment on that, as you can imagine. It was the support networks are now significantly greater than they were. But the pressures on the players are arguably more from a younger age.
Yeah, and I think just looking from afar, it seems like the pressure's pretty high. So you were telling a story earlier about being at with Stuart Lancaster talking about resilience. Do you want to share that one? Because I think that's a good story.
This is something I should probably speak to Stuart about, but this is stuck with
me.
I'll send the podcast.
No, it's interesting because my wife reminded me of it this morning, because it's stuck with those things that, it's just those things that you remember. Like players, people talk to me, do you remember that game? Do you remember this? Do you remember that? No. Or sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. Do you remember this? Yeah, I remember this. We had it was unusual. We didn't, all the other clubs I've been at hadn't had a sort of formalised review process of throughout the year, and Stuart had that, and you were graded 1 to 5 on certain aspects of your professionalism. I can't remember any of the other categories. All I know is I scored high. You'd like to know, Russ. A 5.
Apart from one skill, where you got a 1.
Of course you did.
And I think I scored 2 or 3 or something. On resilience. And bear in mind, this was my last year of playing. I didn't know it was my last year of playing at the time. And I had recovered from a second ACL to be there. And I balked at it because he said, no, I don't
You sound that. Like you're still a little bit salty about it now.
What do you mean?
I think you might
no,
be.
No, I was, no, it was, no, because he had a point, because I saw myself, and I argued with him, because I said, well, I still must be pretty resilient. I've come through two ACLs near the end of my career to be here, to play, to actually be here. And I'm not reaching the heights I want to at the moment. But and he saw it slightly differently. He said, "Yeah, but you're and I had this. I joined Leeds at that point. Leeds had been relegated the season before from the Premiership to the Championship, and a load of players had left. And so I saw this as my opportunity to get back to that level of, right, they're going to get promoted, going to be part of that and play Premiership rugby again. But I think my desire to do that burnt so brightly and strongly that actually when I wasn't being selected, because I wasn't being honest, I wasn't in the form I needed to be coming back from my injury, that he said, yeah, but in training, when you're not picked or something happens, you really show it. And you really show that you can, and then you perhaps you're not in training, you're perhaps more disruptive than you realise. Because there's a team run and you're the person sort of putting yourself back in training and making a nuisance of yourself, and that doesn't help the team. And again, it's one of those things you reflect on and actually realise that, So resilience had that sort of different thing. Yeah, I'd shown resilience to be there, I'd got there, but then the resilience almost the day-to-day basis of then coping with not being selected or things not going your way was something he highlighted, and I think he had a point.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? It just shows what a huge, broad topic the word resilience covers. Definition's important, isn't it? You know, how do you define resilience? How do you define bounce back ability? Rusty and I, we don't know, do we?
Yeah, and even got me thinking there a little bit about, like, yeah, who helped you with any of these skills? Like, let's be honest, you know, and you, because similarly, you were part of a period, you must have been part of Lambridge United when we were at Bath. When
I was the captain of Lambridge
United. You were the captain of Lambridge United. So there was a team, so there was a group of players and we weren't getting picked for the first team, and we had our own bibs, and I think we might have gone out drinking wearing bibs.
I think I've still got my bib.
Still got your bib.
I kept and it was as a, this, as a source,
you know,
of pride.
And it actually wasn't, I don't know if it was that helpful, do you know what I mean? Like,
no, it was a team within a team. We almost created, because I was in my last, and this is really what led me to leaving Bath. I'd been made, there was a more established second team fixture list than there is now. It doesn't really exist. And I was captain of the United team, which is kind of not something perhaps you want, but it was ironically, and in my final season at Bath, I probably played the least first team rugby, but I was probably playing the best rugby that I played my whole entire time there, but because of the competition, just couldn't really get a look in, which made me think, right, I'm either going to stay here and accept that this is it, or I'm going to have to move and try. And that's why I left, and it worked out well for me doing it. But yeah, we had this.
Did you enjoy that second team rugby playing? It sounds like you were playing well.
We had a really successful season. We had a team of youngsters with the odd, well, sort of older players that are dropping down and what have you, but we played some great stuff, we played great games, and we established, and it was good fun, and we almost established an identity which wasn't frowned upon or discouraged of Lambridge United. We were wearing the bibs in training, so we were running as the opposition or whatever, and it was kind of a bit of, yeah, it was actually quite fun. But then I realized that there's only so many times I can play a second team fixture and get excited about it. I got to move on, and that's ultimately what I did. But I don't think it was helpful to us. It was, and we actually, I remember, I think the first team, yeah, were struggling at the time as well, and we would go out on a social.
Lambridge and I were smashing it. They were having way too much fun.
We were going out on a social, and we had first teams going, oh, can we come with you? Can we come with you? And I asked them quietly, can we come with you on a night out? They go, oh, we might let you if you play for. Yeah, it was bizarre.
I sometimes think one of the most freeing moments is when you get handed the bib and you get told to play how you want against the first team. I think it's one of the, like, you go, oh, at last I can, like, express myself on a rugby pitch. So sad. I remember Biggsy and Vix used to talk about that at Yorkshire all the time. Like, they used to love when they were, like, playing against the first team and causing hassle for the first team. But, of course, eventually the coach gets annoyed with it.
Yeah, and I was, you know, and that's what I was doing at Leeds. I was getting stuck in. I was trying to prove a point, because I thought, anyone can do this on the training field. I was trying to show how much this means.
Who are you showing that to? Yourself?
The coaches, the other teammates, myself. Yeah, probably. But just trying to make that impact. I one of my teammates was Kieran Mile. He was 18 at the time. I was 30 years old. I've talked to him about it since, because I had a fight with him in training. Yeah. I was 30 years old, What am I doing?
You had just to clarify, you had a fight with an 18-year-old boy.
He might be 19.
But Keenan's an interesting one, isn't it? Because he's obviously gone on post-rugby and studied this. And did he get a PhD in?
Yeah, like, he's a member of our welfare advisory board.
And so around what types of area? And obviously, all instigated by this fight you had with him.
No.
18/19.
I think I got called to one side by Darryl Powell on the coaches' going, really?
Yeah,
fair point.
Yeah, not cool.
What's Keenan doing? How's that working?
Yes, so we have a welfare advisory board, which is something we established a few years ago, because it's one of these things, because it's so broad, the work we do is so broad, that we need, we don't have the answers to everything. So we have a panel of medics, psychologists, researchers, sports scientists, who we can refer things to and ask and meet with them to discuss. And they're sort of independent of us, but they can go and give their views, their sort of wider views, tapping into that wider knowledge base of former players, current players as well. And it just gives us a different dynamic, because it's very easy in this role to get stuck in a certain mindset. And sometimes it's difficult to, because there's so much going on, so much you're working on, to actually be able to take a moment to sort of see the bigger picture. And that's really important, having that kind of advice.
That does sound important. Can I just take you back, just something I wanted to pick you up on there. You said you were having too much fun.
And Richard's having too much fun.
No, you said we were having too much fun.
I was always having too much fun.
Yeah. So
that was the problem.
I mean, I hope this isn't a cliche too much, or I'm going to embarrass myself here, but when I look at baseball in cricket, and the emphasis is on fun, isn't it? I mean, that's what they say it's about. And they've just been hammered in India, but I think that's possibly a good thing. In a way, because they're really committed to how they want to play, win or lose, they're going to keep going. Well, they're getting lambasted in the press a bit, but I think they're going to stick with it because it's too much fun. How much do you think success? Because this is, I have a fundamental issue around pro sport generally, with it being monetized and all about results and not about the individuals and the players. And it being, I mean, sport is a game. It's supposed to be fun. I mean, isn't that the whole underlying point of playing a game for fun? And the England cricket team seem to have sort of said, actually, we're going to have fun. And they've, and plus they're in, pro sport is in the business of entertainment. As somebody who hasn't played pro sport, watches pro sport, I'm quite keen to be entertained. If I'm paying nearly 200 quid to watch a game at Twickenham, I'm quite keen to be entertained. And England just beat Ireland in a very entertaining fashion at Twickenham. And I'm thinking, well, if they were having fun and losing, they get hammered in the press. I think, personally, I'd love that. What's your view on that? Because I guess I'm taking issue with the too much fun phrase. I mean, can you have too much fun playing a game?
You make a very valid point there. because for 11 years, and that's probably a similar time for you, longer, played professional rugby for a job. I mean, that's bonkers in itself as a job. I remember actually one of my wife's friends coming up to me and going, so you play rugby for a job? Yeah. you get paid to play rugby? I was like, yeah. And then it just kind of that does it. So yeah, it's you're right. It's, you know, they get lambasted sometimes for the way they play, for losing, but ultimately, yeah, it's a game. And we call an Academy Induction Day for the first year, because there's loads of different transitions into professional sport, and then whilst you're in professional sport, and ultimately, as we've discussed quite a lot, out of professional sport. And we have an Academy Induction Day where we bring together all of the first year professional rugby players who have just left school, called 18. We bring them all together for a day to talk about some of the pitfalls of being a professional rugby player, because as soon as you become a professional rugby player, to a degree, you could be a target for certain things. Social media, blackmail for young players, that happens. All those kind of things, just to be really aware of a personal responsibility, nights out, all the things, just being really aware that you are a professional rugby player. And these are young lads. But the other part of that is also to remind of the opportunities and what a great profession you're going into. It's a really difficult balance, because you have to be, these lads and girls are leaving say, leaving a school environment, most of the time a college environment, and they're going the next day, and it's not quite that transition because they've already been part of an academy structure normally, but then the next day you are a professional rugby player in a very professional environment.
Simon's going to pick you up on the professional in a second.
Or elite, sorry, elite professional. Yeah,
and elite. Well, okay. You're definitely in an environment.
But you've gone from being a school kid to being an elite stroke professional rugby player.
Well, you did do that, Rusty. I'd say you did do that.
I went to uni, which helped. And by the way, just quickly, having been to your RPA day, I think it's an amazing day. I actually think it's just helpful to pre-mortem some of the problems that are going to happen. And and actually, one of the things that is really impactful around learning is emotion. And like, I remember being at that day, like my mouth wide open, pretty stressed out, listening to some stories and thinking, I wouldn't want that to happen to me.
And we have, we get former players or current players actually to come back and talk about their experiences. So last year we had Danny Cipriani, who had some very interesting stories to tell. Dylan Hartley previously, Elliot Stook came a couple of years ago. Yeah, all those kind of players, just about their experiences. And so the players who are there, sat there, kind of, actually, whatever you go through, 9 times out of 10, these things that people have gone through before. And by the way, if you need support and you need help, we are here. You obviously have a support network, or you presume you have a support network of parents, coaches, friends, but we are here as well. And we're here to be every step of the journey. And also when that journey stops and a different journey takes over, and the preparation for that. So that's what we're about, and that's what we do.
With my Gen Z hat on, the loneliest, most anxious, most depressed generations ever lived on this planet. You know,
where's that stat from?
From my piece of paper, and and I guess sport like exaggerates it. We didn't have what they have now. Like, you know, we didn't have the social media stuff. We didn't have the judgment. Didn't have the, you know, the news editor, and Marcus is on the front page, and he's still a young lad, really, and but in a good way, he's on the front page. But again, he's had lots of stuff where people have queried selection and
online abuse. Players getting online abuse for missing.
What are the themes? What are the themes that you're? What are the themes that are kind of causing issues for young people these days that you're having to then go, you know, put a system and some support around to help them?
Well, I think that's a really prevalent one at the moment. As you say, that's a pressure that we didn't have. The worst we had was reading the newspaper review. Yeah, they give me 6 out of 10. They give me 6.
Dick Tugwell, honestly, like, gave me great marks generally, so I was happy.
Top yourself. But that wasn't the biggest pressure we had. But in terms of that media, that was probably the biggest pressure you had. Now you've got that instant kind of feedback, or that people think they have the right to go online and abuse someone. I mean, it's incredible. And so, actually, again, making sure that players know there is somewhere they can go and get support and help. I mean, the whole thing, I just find it incredible that is that people in society think that is acceptable for someone to go online and abuse people. I find it mind-boggling.
It's less likely to happen in an office.
Yeah, but it's the
definitely.
But and that's the thing. The pressures we talk about with players and how being a professional or elite player is different, or athlete in any way, is you have that instant feedback. You've got the result. You play on Saturday, you get selected. You've been training all week. Sorry, you get selected. You play. You win or lose. You come in on the Monday. You get instant feedback, the video reviews, you've had social media, you've had someone in the press commenting on your performance, and then you get to go again the following week, and again the following week, and it's just that cycle of that's a
judgment,
real
judgment, feedback,
judgment,
opinion,
and then you leave that, and you're supported by it, by the way, in terms of, and you're told where to be and what to do. It's akin to the military in some respects. You have your season planner, you have your training planner, you know, what to wear at what point and be here and do that. And then the bus moves on for whatever reason, and you go into a I'm not trying to compare myself with the current rugby players in that way, but you know, at 30 I walked into an office around the corner and I was a trainee solicitor for the first time. I didn't know how to switch on a computer. I struggled to find the switch.
And
I
you were the only one wearing rugby boots.
I was the only one wearing rugby boots.
Did he have shorts on?
My team were that I joined, it was a construction law department, it was about 80% women. And obviously
that was new to you.
That was complete. And generally the first day, I was showing my desk, and I was thinking, everyone's watching me. Where's the switch for the computer? I couldn't find it, and I found it. So thank God for that. And then I had a lovely person who was my mentor, and she was really good. And she was, I was 30. She was a good few years younger than me as well. And she said, I've sent you an email, but introduction. I'm like, great. Okay, great. Where are the emails? I go for these icons a little bit. And I picked up the phone first. I thought everyone's listening because open plan office. Everyone's listening to me answer the phone. Everyone's listening. Yeah, it was all that kind of stuff. It's completely different. And even now, I kind of look back and go, oh my God. that was the experience. And actually, I started on the same day as another trainee who was a professional kayaker. And he's still there, actually. He's still there as a partner. But we do laugh about that. What are we doing? Walking in as trainee solicitors, just completely different environments, and then surviving in that environment as well, which was interesting.
And so, it just made me think a lot about transitions, really. So as people join businesses, as people leave businesses, as people have children, like there's just always transitions in your life. I would agree with you, like. I found those hard. Probably, yeah. I don't think I found retiring as hard as you. I can't remember the game. I can't remember the moment. But I think that I would have benefited from more support. Like when we arrived at Bath, when you were greeted, but you weren't greeted. You were told to, go over there and earn the rights type stuff. Again, I think, and I'm sure it's something you're thinking a lot about, Simon, with all the stuff you're doing, just helping people. Those transitions are probably like some of the most stressful, challenging moments we'll ever have.
I remember, because before my role as player welfare director, I was a player development manager. So I was one of those people working in the clubs. I worked at Bath and London Irish. And there was a player who I struggled to connect with for a long time. And normally I found myself being able to connect with people quite easily. And I it took me years to work out this player. A good couple of years. And eventually it dawned on me because I read an article about, and in some ways, they had come from a completely different environment, completely different social setup, completely different part of the country, and had, and this is a good few years ago, so it's not recent, so a good, at least 12 years ago. But essentially, he'd kind of arrived in Bath, was put up in a really, was essentially right, staying in, I think, the circus or somewhere in Bath, completely alien environment. And the thing was about is that a lot of the players there at the time were probably private school kids. I'd gone to private school as well. So it was only when I read an article, and he'd been at the club a good couple of years, I read about his background, his upbringing, the challenges he'd had. I kind of realised that the reason why I haven't been connecting, it's not him, it's me. And then we talked about it and we had a great relationship, and I couldn't understand why he wasn't turning. I was put on courses or put on talks or things like that or experiences, and he wouldn't turn up. I get really frustrated. And then you kind of get to know the person, and it just changed things completely. But that was just my perceptions and my kind of, and that level of support is kind of where we get to a real granular level of kind of really trying to build genuine relationships with players to understand what their needs are. And that's fundamental to what we're about.
I've got one more question. Can I ask it, Simon? Can I have your permission? Have you got any?
No, go for it.
What has rugby given you around bounce back ability? And I'm going to ask you to give me a number between 0 and 5. Between 0 and 100, but it can't end in a 0 and a 5. What percentage do you do that?
Sorry, say it again.
I'm confused. I've explained myself really badly.
It's not very reasonable.
Basically, I'm going to ask you a terrible question.
Can't end in
Rusty, you can't ask a question.
Okay. What has rugby given you around resilience and bounce back ability? And what percentage of that, can it end in a zero or five, do you think was deliberate? And how much of it actually just happened through the experiences? How much of it happened? Because you're now talking about deliberate things. You're talking about we put people around people.
Yeah.
We pre-mortem stuff. When they join from the academy, we help that transition. Go back to our time. Like, how much do you think it's helped you? But also, like, how much of that was intentional?
It has helped me a lot, I think. But how much intentional? Probably not. I mean, I look back at our...
Give me a number.
I look back at our time at Bath when... It was late 90s. Game had just turned professional. Bath had been the biggest and best team in the amateur area. Struggled a bit with that transition, but there's still a lot of those characters around. It was a tough environment. You had to be resilient, as you know. And that resilient that did give me an awful. But none of it was. I don't. None of it. Not a great deal of it was by design. It's by those experiences, by having to sink or swim in that environment. I remember moving over to Wales and kind of assuming that every training session must bring it, or not. Yeah, every week there must be a fight because that's what happens in training where I've just come from. No, that's not actually how things work.
Yeah, people don't have to have a fight on the bus.
No, exactly. What are you doing? Like, is this not what happens every club? No. Right. Okay. A lot of it is by experience. Is experience. A lot of it is by experience. But if I was going to hammer,
do you think some people like? It didn't work out that well for them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, rugby is the game is littered with people who've come out the other side not in great shape because of their experience as well. My experience, it did help me, but how much is it is rugby experience? How much is life experience? I'd really struggle. I'm sorry, Rusty, I can't put a figure on it, but it's almost impossible. I'd be guessing. But.
And to be fair to you, you have got a brilliant wife who'd be very good at helping you. Support, like, you're the same, like, your wife's important.
I'm talking through all these things. My wife's been the biggest anchor of all of them.
Yeah.
Because it gives you a different perspective. Even this morning, coming on here. But, my role as well has also, my current role has taught me a lot as well, because rugby's had to go through some incredibly tough times. In the last 4 or 5 years, and none more so than in the last 18 months, where clubs going out of business, where we had 180 of our members without work, two clubs going, Wasps and Worcester going at the same time, in an experience we hadn't gone through before. I'd gone through it as a player, actually, which we alluded to earlier in Wales, of a club disappearing. But we hadn't gone as an organisation, and the resilience going to that unknown, and frankly, at times taking a lead as well, and having to with the team we had all kind of going through this first time, and that experience was something else, but not nearly as tough as obviously the people who are going through that, who have been made redundant suddenly, and end up actually being not three clubs, but we helped out with Jersey Reds, Worcester Warriors women as well, so five clubs, and what I learned from that was everyone pulling together as a team and relying on build that good team around you who you can rely upon. I'm still terrible at delegating, but when you have a good team around you and they go, you know, I can do that for you, I can do that for you, and just having faith in that team, the RPA team stepping up to the plate and doing some phenomenal work for individuals, for squads, stuff that won't ever be talked about, but going really,
that does sound amazing. So to wind up, I'm going to ask you an impossible question.
Another one.
Yeah, no, this one's really hard. What would be your advice? Maybe Rusty, you could chip in as well to help, as it's hard. Just so I'm not being too mean. But what would be your top three pieces of advice to, given all of that stuff you've been through, the stuff you've just been through with clubs going bust, all that advice you've had over the years, The fact that you were in what sounds like a pretty dreadful environment for resilience, if I'm completely honest with you, but you came out the other side. Well, yeah, but I suspect a lot of people might have. Yeah.
It's a great environment for accidental resilience.
Lots of fighting. Not sure that's going to help too much. But with that, what would be your top three pieces of advice that you would give to? Let's broaden this out as well, just to make it even harder. Not rugby players, to people that will help them be resilient and I'll help a little bit, because you've just given us one, which was your team.
Yeah. Okay. That is a really difficult question. I think it's just for players coming to the game, or people trying to help.
No, just anybody who is looking to become more bouncy, more bounce back ability, because you know
I've got my three already. So a lot ready,
of I know Russ still has three. But in terms of the things that you would say, these are going to help you be more resilient generally, rather than rugby players. A lot of people listening to this won't be pro rugby players.
Yeah,
there will be some, I'm sure. But.
The one is always the team around you. But phrasing that slightly different, know who your anchors are.
Yeah.
And
define anchor.
Someone, those people you can really go to who anchor you. There might not be that many people to anchor you. Yeah. But they're dependable.
Trust.
Stable trust. Those people you can go to.
The people you can ring at 12:30 and say, will you come with me to Poopman Arse?
Oh my God. Yes. Them. You think of, you mentioned my wife, I mentioned my father, sadly no longer with us, but those people, but obviously, but then, yeah, those people depend upon who when stuff hits the fan, and at 12:30 or whatever, you can call upon to give sort of sound advice. And so that's so it's a bit more than build your team. It's know your anchors.
Cool.
Be honest. Be honest with yourself, be honest with others.
Why?
I just going through that experience, we're just going through where we were kind of talking about clubs going under and what happens around there. There's what we found that, and I found it as a player going through that as well. Sometimes there isn't, and because people are scared and whatever, and people don't know what's going on. The most important thing there is deal in facts.
Yeah, hear that.
Deal in facts. Don't deal in rumours. Don't deal in, you know, deal with what you know for certain, because rumours start to swirl and things like that, and you build hope that things are going to be slightly better. Dealing facts, and for that you need people to be honest. So that's it. Know your anchors, be honest with yourself, be honest with other people as well. A third one, I think we talked about it. It's enjoyment. Try and see an enjoyment in what you're doing, what you think, because it's when I say
Lambridge United,
or as people say, you're the player welfare director of the RPA. That sounds amazing. You're not saying I'm an accountant or whatever, but you go, that must be amazing. And sometimes you need to step back, and I need to step back sometimes and go, crap, it is.
It's a cool job. Jealous.
So, those three things. I'm not sure that helps. But
sometimes in the weeds would be my view. It's quite helpful for you to step back and recognise the progress you've made. And my three were, just the right, again, mentor. So first, we've got a few stresses at the moment. I rang Fletch. He's pretty good at it. I think the dual identity bit's really important, especially with sports people. So who do you want to be as a human? What's the stuff you want to reflect on at the end of every day and go, have I done that? And then I just think the stuff, again, go back to the RPA day, but pre-morteming stuff like performing mental simulations of tasks and scenarios before they happen. Of course, you can't predict all of them, but generally getting pretty good at thinking about if this happens, then this.
Yeah, but also you can get into overthinking on that as well, so you just got to balance that out. If you're someone like me, you can overthink very easily, so it's that balance. But you're absolutely right, it's
and that comes down to individualization, doesn't
of course
it?
And no one plays the game of True Pursuit slower than Rich Brian. He's definitely like overthinking.
I'm good at it though.
there we are. Well, amazing. Thanks, Rich. Thanks for coming on the pod. Really, really appreciate your time. Fascinating stuff. And you have got an amazing job. I'm very jealous. And it does sound amazing.
Over and out.
Well, that was another great pod. And yeah, he's your mate, but I do think he's got a cool job. It's a stressful job, but I think it's a cool job, unbelievably important one. Yeah, I mean, so much to unpack from that. Wow. Yeah,
even just interesting for me to hear some of those stories of him like running up the hill and leaving and the buses going. And yeah, I wasn't that aware of that stuff, if I'm honest. And I actually saw, like, obviously people can't see it live, but I saw some like fire in it. I know you picked up on it, but I actually saw a bit of fire in his eyes a couple of times there. I still think he's like really annoyed about it.
Oh, he definitely hasn't completely dealt with it. No, no. So let's do the usual thing and take a couple of things out. Let's do one each. You do one, I'll do one. You do one, I'll do one, yeah?
Yeah, my first one is accidental versus on purpose. I think the RPA are doing really good stuff around just putting this support network around players and helping them. And, you know, as you'll know from your work with Suzanne and Tyler Grains, like, can't just leave this stuff to chance. Lots of it was left to chance. Like, Rich was lucky. Like, honestly, as he, you know, Sarah's a force of nature. She's also, like, unbelievable at this stuff. He had a dad who was super supportive.
Sarah's his wife, yeah.
Not everyone has that.
No.
I definitely didn't have that. It made me think a bit about, like, I moved from Middlesbrough, you know, come from Middlesbrough, and then I was living on Pulteney Street in Bath, and, like, couldn't be any further apart, those two worlds. And actually, like, how people helped me with that wasn't, like, it was kind of by accident, really.
It does sound accidental. And that, you know, when you guys are talking about fighting and all that kind of stuff, I'm thinking, well, that doesn't sound like a very good, resilient environment. And yeah, the experience for a very small number of people would have made them resilient, but it's bound to have left some car crashes on the way. Must have.
There's definitely some car crashes. I have a really vivid memory as well of being on a bus on the way to the Heineken Cup dinner and two future England World Cup winning internationals having to have a fight with a past Welsh and British and Irish Lions player, like full on fight, being forced to have that. And I was like, this is pretty weird. Like, I've had a few beers and even I'm finding this
weird. Resilient. That's just out of order. So now it does seem to be that there's a lot more intention and support, and the stuff that Rich is doing sounds really, really good.
Yeah, super intentional. I think the clubs are starting to recognise it as well, in the same way that the best businesses are, and they've got people who are really like honed in on this. They're being intentional. They've got a plan. They're helping people. They understand ahead of time, for example, you know, if someone's leaving or someone's arriving, how can we help that person? So, yeah, look, it's a different game to the game it was when Lambridge United were trawling the cider bars of Bath in the mid-90s.
Well, and that takes me to my first one, which is picking you out and too much fun. How are you ever going to have too much fun?
Yeah, I loved your line. It's just a game.
It is just a game. I mean, it's not though, is it? I mean, that's the problem with pro sport and money, is it takes it from being a game and turns it into a job, and then you lose the fun side of it. It sounded to me, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounded to me that you guys probably had the best time when you were playing for Lambridge United for Bath Seconds.
Yeah, I think we were both coming back from injuries and playing quite a bit at that point for the Seconds, and yeah, it just felt like we had belonging, felt supported. Of course, you couldn't do it now. Like,
I want to play for Lambridge United. Yeah, that sounds amazing.
You definitely didn't want to come to the Beehive drinking cider, no, wearing a bib.
I wouldn't have enjoyed that so much.
Although lots of the first team players did at that point as well. And it just wouldn't have, again, it wouldn't exist in the modern world, would it, where the first team are losing and the second team are out drinking, wearing bibs.
Well, and then that's kind of my point, you know, too much fun, but when you look at basketball and them trying to put fun in, isn't that something that we ought to be doing in business, sport, in all environments, is trying to make the experience enjoyable and make that front and center? Because high performance is going to come from enjoyment, in my opinion. It's certainly in the business world, a happy team is definitely a more productive team.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but again, it comes down to the skill of the leader, doesn't it? So I would, you know, probably the other thing this has made me reflect a lot on is just how important leadership is in this. So if the leader doesn't want people to have fun and is measuring some other stuff, then we ain't going to have fun. My experience of rugby is generally some pretty poor leadership, like actually like not really any kind of shared intention, not like, you know, us going, look, this is how you're going to get the best out of me. Yeah, just those conversations never really happened. So,
sure.
Again, I think it's changing. You know, we see some amazing role models across the game. Obviously, you know, Razor's been, you know, with his dancing and connecting with Gen Z and all that.
Razor, explain for those.
Scott Robertson, yeah, best
what,
mate.
What an amazing coach.
Yeah. So, you know, Wayne Smith, he mentioned Stu Lancaster, like, you know, even that blew my mind and got me thinking, like, his first review, and this was the last year of his career, his first proper review was the last year of his career.
Yeah, wow.
What was that? Now, of course, you do have a review on a Monday, and maybe they, you know, they conflate the two, that calling you in out in front of the team in a team meeting is a review. But again, I had a real reflection of how often did I have a really, like, intentional one-on-one meeting to, you know, that was based around my development, that I would, like, probably own it. It would be on my terms. The answer's never.
And in the business world, how many people are actually doing that? Because there's so many performance reviews, these sorts of things done, run by HR teams. They're not doing reviews. They're just saying, you're not performing, or you are performing.
Yeah, I don't mean that type. I mean, like, a really developmental, owned by me, like, would be vital from
dream catching at Tardigrains.
Dream catching at Tardigrains. Mm.
Yeah, so it's not happening that much, though, is it? Let's be honest. I mean, we're saying, oh, isn't it amazing that only happened at the end of his career? But you go to leadership, don't you? You had a leader there who recognised the importance of that stuff. You've got leaders in so many organisations that think that isn't worth doing.
Yeah, they're just on the hamster wheel. They're down in the weeds. They're not able to take that step back and recognise what's this person need. And of course, this gets even more accentuated in sport, because you are being judged on a weekly basis. Like, you know, you've got matches, you've got selection, you know, you've got injury. There's so much going on that I think it almost becomes way more important in sport. And of course, people are doing it way more now than they used to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it happens in business too. I mean, people are sat there worrying about their jobs.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're generally given information now on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, saying you have done this much work, or you have invoiced this much, or whatever it might be. There's plenty of information being fired at people without a huge amount of context. And it can be pretty terrifying.
And I guess the flip of that is I work doing some work with some people who would say to me, I actually have no idea if I'm doing a good job, Rusty, which is also like, there's two sides to this. Isn't there? The people that haven't got a clue if they're doing a good job, and they've got people that are being made very, very aware that they're currently not doing a good job, possibly not getting the support they need. And it's based around, you know, numbers and output and that type of stuff.
Sure. Well, cool. My last one was transitions. I mean, the image in my head of him being on the training pitch, I think he was, and watching everybody else get on the bus and then watching the bus leave. That's burnt in my mind now, let alone his.
Yeah.
That really brings home the importance of support and resilience around transition. So if somebody's moving from one job to another, somebody's changing from being a rugby player to being a solicitor, you know, going and trying to switch on the computer, all that kind of stuff, I think you have to realize that is incredibly stressful for people. And that is a point which you've really got to pay attention to, and you've got to put a lot of resource behind having lots of support and lots of help with bounce back ability for people in those situations. That transition between roles, jobs, sports, whatever it might be, that is a real obvious point at which people really need some help. So that was beautifully, the picture painted in my eye of that is, I mean, it's bringing a tear to my eye. It's unbelievable.
And probably, again, I've been thinking again then about leaving the RFU, and although there was a huge sense of relief at leaving, not a single member of the leadership have contacted me since I left in 2018.
Well, it's a difficult conversation to have, isn't it? So, you know, they probably don't think there's any benefit for them in it. So
I might message them all later today. Anyway.
Yeah, maybe don't,
maybe
Rusty.
Don't.
Anyway, another amazing pod. Thanks for getting Rich on, and speak to everybody soon.
Amazing, and the microphones worked.
I hope.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Bounce Back Ability Podcast with Simon and Russell. We've really enjoyed your company. If you want to reach out to us, Simon, where can they reach you?
LinkedIn's best place. Simon Ursel, you are S for sugar, ELL. Send me a message. Rusty, where can we find you?
TikTok? No, not really. LinkedIn, Russell Earnshaw. And then the same on Twitter, but please ignore all my political thoughts.
Yeah, second that.
Over and out.